We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Monday, March 18th, and if you are like me, you are still not adjusted to this whole spring forward nonsense, but that is okay. I have a maple coffee this morning, which is new for me. I tried this from Nespresso. It's very interesting, but maple coffee with a little bit of vanilla in it, and it's actually great. But we're going to be talking about free speech this morning, and we're going to be talking about government infringement potentially upon the First Amendment, some of the legislation that is pending before Congress, and also into the next segment about how the mainstream media is completely and utterly just weaponizing media yet again against former President Trump in this term of bloodbath. But let's start with the Supreme Court. So the U.S. Supreme Court on Friday addressed free speech rights in the digital age, and they decided Friday that government officials can sometimes be sued under the Constitution's First Amendment for blocking critics on social media. In a unanimous decision in two cases from California and Michigan, the justices set a new standard for determining if public officials acted in a governmental capacity when blocking critics on social media, a test to be applied in lawsuits accusing them of violating the First Amendment, that coming from Reuters. And the Supreme Court is also poised to hear arguments today at 10 a.m. Eastern. You can always go on supremecourt.gov and listen to the audio, the live audio of the oral arguments, and this is in Murphy versus Missouri, originally filed, and probably you know this case is Missouri versus Biden, which, according to Dr. Robert Malone on social media, he posted this morning, is the biggest free speech case ever in the history of the USA. Former Attorney General, now Senator Eric Schmidt, posted also a short video on his social media. I'd encourage you to go watch that, talks about Missouri versus Biden. And when he was attorney general, he originally filed that. The Supreme Court is going to hear the oral argument today. The government can't censor speech, and it can't outsource censorship to social media giants either. So this coming in the wake of the debate over the TikTok legislation and how much power is given in that legislation unilaterally to whoever the current sitting president is to determine what constitutes a national security threat, what apps can be marginalized and be forced to be divested from different companies. Some like Chip Roy and the Heritage Foundation and Brendan Carr of the SEC, who I've interviewed on my shows the last couple of weeks, have said that this is very narrowly tailored to just direct this legislation toward foreign adversaries, and that language is specifically in the legislation. And then others are suggesting that, yeah, but there's always a workaround for the Democrats, and the fact that Democrats are so enthusiastic about this maybe potentially signals that this is more shades of the Patriot Act that can be used by future Democrats and leftists and presidents to invade the privacy rights of United States citizens. So joining me to discuss all of this and kind of the big picture is our good friend Steve Dace, who hosts The Steve Dace Show on The Blaze, which, as you know, I believe is one of the most important commentaries of our age right now, and he's one of those that I listen to all the time. So good morning, Steve, and where do you want to start?
Well, I think you laid it out there, and good morning to you, Jenna. Thank you for the kind words. I think you laid it out there very eloquently and thoroughly, and really what this articulates is the current, well, one of the current and several dilemmas we have as a people, because this is an app that is clearly and obviously used as a conduit by really, at this point in time, the only true peer superpower in the world, China, to inject unprecedented amounts of rot gut directly into the jet stream and bloodstream of our culture in ways not even really Hollywood is able to, because, you know, the audience of people who want to access Hollywood's content on their phones compared to other broader environments hasn't reached a critical mass yet. This is the most used app in America by the youngest generations. It's the most influential social media app I think we've ever had in terms of the broader culture. Twitter is in terms of the making of, or now X, the making of narratives and the framing of news cycles. But in terms of what the wider populace uses, this is the most influential as social media app we've ever had because of what gets conveyed there and the way it's conveyed there in video form. And anecdotally, I would be confident in saying that that app is responsible for more gender mutilations of our children than any other singular device. And I'll explain what I mean. I mean, it's I noticed another guy's nakedness, you know, when we were showering after gym class. So when I was growing up, if we did that, if you noticed another guy's nakedness, you never dared said a word to anybody else about it. And then it just moved on because nobody, you know, planted that seed, never got planted. Nobody watered it and just went on with your life. Nowadays, I jump on and make a TikTok about it. And everybody in the comments on my TikTok tells me that I'm either gay or maybe I'm really a boy born in a girl's body. And that feedback loop begins. Nothing ever interjects with that. That seed gets planted. And right away, my TikTok following is my peer group, not actual friends. And before you know it, I'm in the counselor's office. And that's at the point now where the feeder system gets to the institutional level. And there's no stopping that momentum at all before you're taking puberty blockers. And that is happening by the bushel load in America every single day. This is an obvious conduit of rot gut from the Chinese communists to inject it into our culture. And yet, because no one trusts anybody, and we're in a cold civil war, and we all know we can't live together, it's just we're like that marriage that stays together for the children, which really is not the true. You're staying together because financially it would be, you'd each take too much of a hit in separating. But everybody knows that's not a long-term, you know, rationale for a marriage. So everybody just sits here and waits until something organically blows the whole thing up. Because of that, we're paralyzed. And I get why we're paralyzed. I mean, frankly, on a given basis, you know, I am more threatened by my own government on a given basis as a believer with a biblical worldview than I am from the Shycoms. So I understand the tension on both sides, but I would also say that the reality is, and that's, you know, I love how you juxtapose the Murphy v. Biden case with this, because that case demonstrates that they don't need, you know, legislation and statutes like this. They're not bound by those things. They're just, if they want to do chicanery, they're just going to do it. Okay, this is, I mean, the Democrats are the id party. They're just going to do what they feel. So if we're concerned about, you know, well, the Democrats may take this and run with it, it's too late for that. They're going to do that with whatever they want. That's why you're in the Supreme Court all the time when they do that. So I would go ahead and vote for the legislation to ban it, because we're beyond concerned about what precedent the Democrats will use. I wish we were still making those arguments. That's from 2005. Okay, those arguments are gone now. And the reality is Democrats will just do whatever they want. Their current political strategy is we're just going to do what we want, and we dare you to find a federal judge or a Supreme Court somewhere to tell us we can't. That's really their entire MO, a schema as a party. So if we're going to not do things out of fear of what Democrats would do with it, it's too late for that. I wish we were still having that argument. So I would go ahead and ban TikTok now anyway, because at least I might get some good out of it, and Democrats will just do whatever they're going to do anyway, especially when there's very little remnant of a Republican Party to try and stop them.
Yeah, and that's a great analysis, Steve Dace, that the Democrats really don't need more legislation to just go ahead and infringe on Americans' rights and privacy and doing whatever they want to do anyway. So we might as well move forward with some good with the rationale of the TikTok ban. But that begs a bigger question of how do we roll this back to having the arguments of 2005 in a meaningful way that we're actually trying to stop the Democrats from just going ahead with whatever they want to do, because we've seen this. I mean, I could fill the rest of the program with instances of how the Democrats have been lawless. They've ignored the law. They've manipulated the law. They've used a lawfare. They've just gone ahead and done whatever they want. And it seems like there's very few in the judiciary or even in Congress or anyone with any ability or power to stop them that actually has the stomach or the backbone to try.
Well, you've heard me say this a million times, but it's one of the mission statements of our show. We're not a nation of laws, and we never have been. We're a nation of political will, and we always will be. All right. And so when you have a government in any form of representative government, the people are going to get the amount of tyranny that they are willing to tolerate. They're not victims ever. Never. You're never a victim. Never. So you're either a victor or an enabler. Those are your only two options. You always get the amount of tyranny you're willing to tolerate. So, you know, what's happened for a generation is, you know, the Southern Baptist Convention spent a generation right after its prophetic witness basically elevated Reagan to the White House. What the generation that followed basically decided to cash the check and get seeker friendly and purpose driven and destroyed itself. So that happened in the spiritual realm. That was the most prominent, influential vestige of Christianity in America at that point in time. And so now what you're seeing in the natural realm is the moral wherewithal just is not there. And, you know, the amount of Americans that go to school board meetings are, you know, I think there's still more people that went and saw the Marvels, you know, the latest MCU movie, than go to school board meetings in America. And that ain't many on either front. You know, we're just not engaged really on multiple levels. We have way too much comfort and the state of the Republican Party is a reflection of that. And so now you're left with your Elijah remnant of those who haven't made the sacrifice to Baal. And so here we're now asking politicians to do things ahead of the curve of the culture. Good luck with that. I mean, almost, and I know why we're doing it. We don't have much of a choice, but the reality is politicians, with very limited exceptions, for every Winston Churchill who transcended his era, and then you can tell he did because after he saved their civilization, they voted him out in the next election. All right. So for every Winston Churchill or King, go back to the Bible times, King Josiah, you know, there's a reason why you remember Josiah's name, because you've got a bunch of other kings' names and kings and chronicles leading up to Josiah who didn't, keep the sacrifices and tear down the high places. And that's the reality of where we're at right now. We're now asking politicians to get ahead of the curve. There's a few places where that's happened. You see that in Florida. When we say politics flows downstream from culture, it does on the right. It does not on the left. I mean, on the left, what happened is they installed gay marriage, and then all of a sudden, you know, none of us knew what a Pride Month was until 2015, and then it metastasized to become the most important month on the calendar for the rest of our lives. On the right, politics flows downstream from culture because our side has distractions like families and jobs and ministries, has comforts in the suburbs to keep it distracted, and therefore our politicians are lazy and lack courage because they're a reflection of us. And so on our side, we need 50 years of pro-life activism to finally get one Supreme Court precedent overturned. And that's the only real major Supreme Court precedent overturning of my lifetime. And so if we have to work, if that's the ratio of work for victory, we're going to run out of time here. And that's why I always say we're at revival or bust territory. There's either going to be a great awakening in this generation, or it'll be America's terminal generation.
Yeah, really well said. And as you were talking, that was exactly where my mind was headed, was that we need revival in this country, and we need Christians to be more engaged. And instead of just thinking about ourselves and our purpose, and later on in the show, I'm going to talk about what my church was talking about yesterday, which were God's promises. And part of these promises include rest, include freedom, include being able to trust him. And part of this goes into purpose. And as I was sitting in church yesterday, Steve, I was thinking, you know, the purpose that we all get up and we think about all of these material things more often than we think that our purpose as Christians here on earth is to know and worship God fully. That is our chief purpose. And if we truly understood that, we would be world changers, because we would be fulfilling the Great Commission. We could not help but infuse our faith into absolutely everything that we do, instead of being so focused on our problems, what we want, our comfort, all of these things that the Republican Party and unfortunately the church seem to be so vested in. And I think that is one of the major problems that we see in the church today, is that it's so focused on serving ourselves that we're forgetting to turn around and worship God. That, to me, is the biggest hurdle for revival.
And I think that, if you know me, I'll just be blunt. That's one of the biggest challenges we have strategically moving forward, as the Southern Baptist Convention is immersed in a civil war, whether it's going to go completely woke or see revival within its own ranks, which you've seen now to kind of take their place. Pentecostals and charismatics now are, by and large, the largest remnant of Christians that are holding the line in the culture. But keep in mind that the largest visible manifestation of that most Americans have seen are, frankly, a heresy. The wealth and health and wealth, name it and claim it stuff, the Benny Hinn stuff, the stuff that's a caricature of Pentecostalism and a Saturday Night Live skit version of it, is what most Americans have seen. Joel Osteen, that kind of stuff. It's about you, you know, your best life now, that kind of stuff. And so it'll be very interesting to see how Pentecostalism in America, now that it's in the place where the Southern Baptist Convention used to be, how it's going to be able to police itself when, if they're the ones holding the line, and they are, the manifestation of their movement most Americans are familiar with is a me-driven, life coach-driven heresy. That'll be fascinating to see.
We got to get back to the Bible, to the Word of God, and to knowing God in truth. Steve Dace, really appreciate it. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Last year, because of you, Preborn's network of clinics saw over 58,000 babies saved. Thank you to all who made this possible. Let's celebrate these precious babies. When Antoinette found out she was pregnant, she was in a very bad place. She didn't know how she could raise a child on her own. She searched for an abortion clinic, and God led her to a Preborn clinic where she met her baby on ultrasound. When she saw her baby and heard the heartbeat, she broke down crying, and the nurse reminded her that babies are a blessing from God. She chose life. Her daughter's name is Treasure because she is a gift from God. Each of these babies are truly miraculous, and every day Preborn celebrates 200 miracles. $28 a month can be the difference between the life and the death of a child. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection that doubles the baby's chance at life. Let's join together and help mothers choose life. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And this is really a battle for the soul of America and for the souls of everyone on earth. I mean, this is just, the stakes are so high. We have to influence the culture. And yet the mainstream media would like us focused on hoaxes, on totally top-level, ridiculous stuff that, in the grand scheme of things, is totally meaningless. And this was put on perfect display yesterday following remarks on Saturday made by former President Trump at a rally, where critics seized on a line that, and Nancy Pelosi then ran to CNN and suggested that Trump could be looking to, quote, exact a bloodbath in America if he doesn't win re-election. She stressed that Trump can't win the upcoming election, and so spun his bloodbath remark as possibly being a threat to Americans. Because, but the bigger point of this is that it's not just about this one word and phrase and what he said at the rally, and we're going to play that full clip so that you get the context in just a moment, but it's about the left trying purposefully to use any remark, any phrase, anything to paint all conservatives and all Christians as these right-wing extremist threats to democracy in a way that is trying purposefully to foreclose and infringe upon our freedom of speech, to shut us down so that we will fear their lawfare against us, and we will fear the knock at our door for something that we posted, something that we said, some kind of lobbying engagement, standing up. Well, meanwhile, they can go and manipulate anything they want or just be completely lawless and ignore the laws. And so this is just one more example of how the mainstream media, Biden doesn't even need to campaign because the mainstream media is his mouthpiece, and they're campaigning for him. They're saying absolutely everything that he would be saying, so he doesn't even have to do anything. He can go hide in his basement. So this whole controversy was over this term bloodbath that Donald Trump used in his speech. So listen to the context, the fuller context of this. And you tell me if this sounds like he's calling for violence against Americans if he doesn't win in 2024. This is cut one.
Unbelievable when I see it going. But I got to know all these people. They're very smart, very streetwise. And I would do the same thing. If I had prisons that were teeming with MS-13 and all sorts of people that they've got to take care of for the next 50 years, right? Young people, they're in jail for years, and if you call them people, I don't know if you call them people. In some cases, they're not people, in my opinion, but I'm not allowed to say that because the radical left says that's a terrible thing to say. They say you have to vote against him because did you hear what he said about humanity? I've seen the humanity, and these are bad. These are animals, okay? And we have to stop it. We can't have another Lakin. We have so many people. We have so many people being hurt so badly and being killed. They're sending their prisoners to see us. They're sending, and they're bringing them right to the border. And they're dropping them off, and we're allowing them to come in. And these are tougher than anybody we've got in the country. These are hardened criminals. And we've got hundreds of thousands of them. And we're not going to take it. We're just not going to take it. We're destroying. They are destroying our country. I'm telling you. He's the worst president we've ever had and the most incompetent president we've ever had. And he's also the most crooked president we have ever had. Now, other than that, I think he's doing an excellent job. Do we agree?
All right. So in addition to the bloodbath hoax, the media is saying that Donald Trump said in his speech yesterday with regard to immigrants, they're saying that that was the context where he didn't even use the phrase bloodbath. It was in the context of and that was actually a different clip than I had anticipated, which is totally fine. That was my fault for putting the wrong one in our spreadsheet this morning. Again, this is why I need more coffee. But the fuller context was Trump calling for a 100% tariff on cars made outside the country, saying the industry would only be protected with him in office. He said, quote, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole, that's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the whole country in the context of the auto industry. So joining me now is Mark Lauder, our good friend who's with the America First Policy Institute. And Mark, I loved the compilations on social media of how the leftist anchors on, you know, some of our favorite left-wing media have also used the term bloodbath before. But, you know, they're ignoring that. And that's not a call for violence. And yet in the context of President Trump, now they're suggesting that he's of course a threat to humanity and all Americans, and doesn't even see illegals as human beings, and isn't this terrible? They're campaigning for Biden. That's really what this comes down to.
Yeah, good morning, Jenny. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's clear that both the Biden campaign and the left-wing legacy media have decided they cannot win this election on policy. They cannot win it on results because the American people don't like the policies of the Biden administration. I mean, you look, the Real Clear Politics average 55-60, 65% oppose Biden's performance on the economy, inflation, the border, crime, even education, which used to be a Democrat stronghold, now is disapproved. I mean, everything down the line, foreign policy, all of it, he's massively disapproved. So the only way they can compete on this campaign is to try to make you afraid of Donald Trump. And so they will take any word, any phrase, twist it out of context. And, you know, the old saying in politics is if you're defending, if you're explaining, you're losing. But I actually think in this case, many people, maybe some who don't love Trump or the way he tweets or the way he says things, they shake their heads and going, my God, that's not what he was talking about. He was clearly talking about the devastation that would be wreaked on the auto industry, on so many communities where I grew up in the Midwest that were reliant on heavy manufacturing, big manufacturing, auto manufacturing. And he was clearly talking about that in relation to China building electric cars in Mexico and then trying under NAFTA and the USMCA to try to bring those in tariff-free and flood the market. Well, that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about the economy, and yet they can't win on the economy, so they have to try to change the subject.
That's exactly it, Mark Lauder, is that they try to change the subject. And instead of now talking about the economy and talking about what a great economy we had under Donald Trump and how it was so much better for Americans compared to under his presidency, compared to now the 4 years under Biden, now everybody on social media and everything is rushing to defend this one comment and to say, oh, you're taking it out of context, mainstream media, because they're taking one word and they're creating an entire hoax and another story around it. I mean, the same thing, and you know, and you and I were there on the Trump 2020 campaign during, you know, the Very Fine People hoax and, you know, all of these other things that they try to manipulate and say, oh, he doesn't care about veterans, or he's, you know, he's calling for violence, or all of these other things, so that they don't have to talk about the points that he's actually making. And I think you're right that, and I know you're right, that the Democrats are just overplaying their hand. And like they always do, the leftists, the mainstream media that are the mouthpieces for the DNC, they continue to overplay their hand. And reasonable, regular people who are just listening to this, and they heard it for themselves because, thankfully, of social media, they're going, wait a minute, well, that's not true. And they're waking up to this fact, and that's not actually accomplishing what the mainstream media is hoping for. And so how do you think that this ultimately plays with the independents and the moderates who, yeah, maybe they aren't necessarily a fan of a lot of what Trump does, but at the same time, now they're looking, and they don't want to be manipulated. Because the average person who is watching, and I don't care what background they come from, what their political views are, nobody wants to sit there and say, yeah, I'm buying into something that's false and I'm being manipulated.
Well, and I think that's the problem. And look, what we're watching happen in real time is a political realignment in our country. We're looking at how hardworking, middle-class Americans, people of color, you name it, are abandoning the Democrat Party and their radical policies because they don't work. And people are seeing it in real time that these policies don't work, and they're gravitating to policies that they like and that do work and that did make them safer, made things more affordable, allowed them to pursue their dreams of buying a home, taking that dream vacation, getting their kids through college. All of these things are cutting against the lack of results for Democrats, and they're panicking. And so what they're trying to do is to delay this realignment by lying, by manipulating, by creating these hoaxes. I mean, my goodness, hoax after hoax after hoax. And then you look at the American media, who are seeing the trust in the media go down. You see their ratings going down because people just don't, A, need them, and B, don't trust them. And So it's all coming together, this entire left-wing cabal and misinformation machine is unraveling. It's breaking. And they are panicking, and basically what they are doing is trying to do the only thing they can to hope that they can delay this, hope they can get just one more election through, and maybe then we can retool. Maybe then things will start to work, even though their policies haven't worked to date. And maybe that will just get us across the finish line. And yet, every time you look, more and more people are saying, I've had it. I've had enough. Just give me the facts, the real facts. Let me make up my own mind for myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm speaking with Mark Lauder, who is the Chief Communications Officer for the America First Policy Institute. And Mark, I totally agree with what you're saying, as I've said. And I think that this is playing well, ultimately, for Donald Trump heading into November. But then it seems like sometimes he kind of shoots himself in the foot with some of the people that should be in his camp, that want to be, but that are kind of struggling a little bit because he just continues to insult them. And I'm talking, of course, about the continued attacks against Governor DeSantis and people who, you know, like me, I supported him. I supported Governor DeSantis in the primary. Now, based on, you know, what we need to do in November, it's like, okay, you know, primary is very different than a general, but not everybody is going to have that same outlook. And the Trump campaign does need to win over the percentage of the base that, for whatever reason, whether it's support of Governor DeSantis, support of or just, you know, not liking the mean tweets, whatever it is, he has to win them over as, you know, vote for me, not just against Biden. And some of these comments, by going back, you know, calling him the names, you know, saying these things are just, in my view, unforced errors that it's like he just can't help himself. And why does he continue to do this when the Trump campaign clearly needs to, at the very least, have the entire GOP base vote for him if he hopes to win in November?
Well, I do think, you know, we are, you know, political cycles, election cycles ebb and flow. We are still in what would traditionally be considered the primary season, even though it's been locked up and it's over. And so we still have 8 months until the election. You know, I think as we get closer and closer to election day, we start moving through into the summer, into the fall, you will start to see more of that. You will start to see more of the, it's a choice. I mean, I still remember back in 2016, you know, we were in July and August after the convention talking about little Marco Rubio and Lion Ted Cruz. And of course, now they're two very strong MAGA, you know, stalwarts and leaders. You know, sometimes, especially in party, you know, these are family disputes. These are family squabbles. And, you know, sometimes those emotions get a little raw. But as we move further and further, I remember, you know, on the 16 campaign, I was then with Governor Mike Pence. And we spent the last 6 to 8 weeks basically telling Republicans, I know your preferred candidate didn't get the nomination. You've had your say. We know you're upset. Now it's time to come home. Because this is a better choice than, at the time, crooked Hillary Clinton. And I have a feeling that as we continue to go throughout this cycle, as we continue to go out through these next months, you will see, especially as we get into the summer and the fall, you know, people going, look, the choice is clear. Even if you don't love everything he tweets or how he says it, it's better than more of the same. More open borders, more war against religion and religious freedom, more abortion in the 7th, 8th, and 9th month, more inflation, more sky-high gas prices and EV mandates, more open border. And so I think that case will be made, and I have no doubt it will be made. It's just you need to do it when people are paying the most attention, and they're starting to make those choices. And I think as we move through this cycle, you'll see more of that.
And I think people are paying attention, and especially people are paying attention who are engaged in politics and who care a lot. And it's giving, in my view, it's giving a lot of distractions to infighting that is totally unnecessary. Because if Trump had come out and been as conciliatory and saying, you know, and just grateful that Governor DeSantis endorsed him and said, great, you know, and I'm going to be the presence of unity, and he had maintained that, then you know, he could be, and the campaign could be just then turning their aim toward the leftists, and it could be a true Trump versus Biden. But it almost seems like there's something left in the primary that's still not resolved somehow. And, you know, Governor DeSantis, meanwhile, is just, you know, he's back in Florida doing his governor thing and not really paying attention to this. I don't see him going out and saying anything against Trump. So it just, it seems to be ill-timed. And while I agree with you, I think we're going to see a little bit of change in tone, hopefully, and definitely from the rest of the campaign and media surrogates and all of that, they're going to be focused more on Joe Biden. But you're seeing people, even on social media, that the Trump campaign amplifies that don't necessarily work for them. They're not advisors, but they're still pushing DeSantis people to say, you know, you need to come and kiss the ring. You need to have total surrender and basically bow down in front of Muggett. That's not convincing anybody. And we're already out of time, Mark Lauder. So I apologize. I'm just like, you know, I was in the middle of asking you that question, and we're not going to have time for you to respond. But Mark is always with us, and I always appreciate him. You can follow him on social media. But I just, my personal opinion is it is not helpful. You're never going to convince conservatives who want to be convinced on merit to bow down and kiss the ring. That is just not great politics in any way, shape, or form. And if Trump really wants to unify the party moving forward, he's got to tone down that rhetoric. And it comes from the top, because he is the one that everybody else is looking to take their cues from. He has got to make this more about the left than about anything else. We'll be right back with more.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And I wanted to wrap up this Monday morning on an encouraging note and a positive note from an emphasis and a focus on the biblical worldview and not just politics. So, and we do that often on this show, but I think that we need to do that even more, because often the headlines and the news of the day are very frustrating for conservatives, especially for Christians. And what we have once known as America and as the land of the free, the home of the brave, and the country where we could truly exercise our religious liberty, and we could be open Christians and open with worshiping the Lord, we're now facing a lot of challenges that I think even in just my generation, from what I remember growing up, and certainly from my parents' generation, and I know a lot of our listeners, your generation as well, what the America that you knew really isn't the America of today. And some of these battles that we're in, none of us really anticipated. And, you know, I sit here sometimes and I think in 2024, we're really having the conversation of whether a man can become a woman, and queer theory and all of this. And the reason, though, for it is because the left is not just interested in silencing Christians. The left is very interested in paving the way to hell. And to, as Steve Dace said about TikTok in the very beginning, I mean, as the most used app, this is an app that is intentionally trying to plant seeds of destruction in young people. That's the entire point of Marxist queer theory, is to so blur the line of any definition around what it means to be a human being made in the image of God, so that we can, through God, have our identity. They want to completely blur those lines so that we have ultimately no hope. And that turns to all of this depression and suicide and all of the problems that we're seeing rising up in the younger generations, and the epidemic of loneliness that a lot of singles, even, you know, people older than me, that are facing, because we have been telling an entire generation for years and decades that marriage isn't the solution, and that the only thing worth having is pleasure for our own satisfaction and goals, not to have children and a family and God's design. And so all of this is always kind of at the back of our minds. And for those of us who are politically engaged or culturally engaged at all, this, we always kind of live with this cloud of what's going to happen next. And I think there's a little bit of fear in that, because fear, of course, is the unknown, the what ifs, the what is going to happen. And so the encouragement today is that we need to cast that fear off in a biblical manner, in a biblical sense, not by just ignoring it and pretending that everything's fine or going back into our own lives and only focusing on ourselves. That's actually the complete opposite of what we need to do. We need to look at God's design, which is to focus on Him, worship Him, know Him better, because He promises us that when we know Him, we can have rest. And this is what my pastor spoke about yesterday. And it was such an encouraging message that I wanted to share a little bit of it with you this morning. And it comes from Matthew 11. And so we're going through this series at my Church of God's Promises. And it has been so encouraging, because for the Christian, if we, regardless of what's happening in the world and the things that we can't control, the things that we try to control, we try to participate in, ultimately, we need to view what God has told us as Christians, and His promises are only to Christians. He doesn't promise rest. He doesn't promise freedom. He doesn't promise eternal life for anyone who has not come into a saving knowledge of Christ. So this is speaking only to the Christians. And if you're listening and you are not a Christian, you have not accepted Jesus as your Lord and Savior, that is the first step, is to know Him and acknowledge Him for who He is. And when you start that relationship with God, then you will find your identity and you will receive all of the promises of God that He gives only to His own. And so Christians have this peace and have joy and have all of these outward and inward attributes because of who God is, not because of who we are, not because of anything that we've done, not because of anything that we can control or anything that is going on in our lives or not going on in our lives. We can have joy and peace and just not the fear and the stress because of who God is. And so one of the promises is that we can have rest. And rest is very different from just sleeping well. Rest is true. And I know everybody, especially on a Monday morning, everybody knows this very well, that when you don't sleep well, you are tired. You are maybe more frustrated. You have a shorter attention span. I mean, all of these things. And a lot of that comes either from physical health issues or from worry or from stress or from other things. There's a lot of other things that can take away not resting well. But rest in Scripture, it was foreshadowed in the Old Testament Sabbath. The Sabbath, that day of rest, was a foreshadowing of the ultimate Sabbath that is in the person of Christ. And when Jesus promises us rest and entering into the rest of Him, it's really coming into a saving knowledge of Him. So we are actually participating in rest in the Sabbath when we understand and embrace who Christ is. And so in Matthew 11, this is verses 28 through 30, says, and this is Jesus speaking, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest in your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." And for the Christians who are listening to this, we have all heard this. This is one of those passages that is often repeated. But in breaking this down yesterday, there were a few things that I learned that stood out to me that I had never considered before in looking at this verse. And especially for me personally, rest has been something that has been difficult for me over the last few years. And especially with, you know, all of the things that I've gone through that eventually when I can, I'll speak more to, you know, right now I'm under a court order not to get into some of that. But in going through all of the, you know, post-2020, post when I worked for Trump era stuff, there was a lot of stress in all of that. And even before, you know, things that you're aware of, there's stuff that you're not aware of that's gone on. And there were times where, you know, I would be up until 4 a.m. because I just couldn't go to sleep. I could not rest, there were moments of genuinely of panic attacks. I mean, part of the reason that I got my two puppies, Todd and Copper, is literally just to have somebody here with me. And all of that to say is that it's not that I wasn't focusing on God. I was trying to, but there was so much else going on that I just could not rest. And when God promises rest, the ways to find rest in Him are to not focus on your feelings and not focus on your fears, not focus on what may or may not happen or even what is currently happening, but to first worship God for who He is. Worship Him for who He is. And if you don't know who He is, and if you don't understand who is actually making this promise, then you can't have true rest, because we tend to worship God as Christians, but do we really know, are we growing in our knowledge of who He is? Because if we truly understand who is making these promises and who tells us that He has us and that we have certainty in our salvation and for eternity, if we truly knew and comprehended who God is that is making these promises, we would not have nearly as much anxiety and fear for the future or even fear in our circumstances. And A.W. Tozer is one of my favorite authors, and he describes in The Purpose of Man, the entire book ultimately is geared toward worship, that man is designed to worship God. And I would commend that to your reading, because worshiping Him for who He is our ultimate purpose and our design. And as I was talking with Steve Dace earlier in the show, I mentioned that I would unpack this a little bit more in this segment, that if we were really set on understanding that our purpose as human beings made in the image of God is to fully and utterly know and worship Him, then we would be making a difference. We wouldn't be focused on all of our problems. And I'm not trying to minimize anybody's problems, certainly not, you know, the problems of my own that I was just describing. Everybody goes through very difficult, sometimes tragic, trying circumstances. But all of those things pale in comparison to when we are focused on worshiping God and knowing that that is our ultimate purpose. And so then when we truly are worshiping Him, what's the next thing? In verse 20, it says, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and burdened, I will give you rest." And we have to come to Him first before we have rest. It says, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and burdened." You have to go to Him. And how do we go to Him? In prayer. We have to go to Him in our understanding. We have to go to Him in all of our feelings, in all of our circumstances. And then it says, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me." Are we learning from Him, or are we relying on our own feelings? Have we put on the yoke of Christ? Or what are we? So here's the question. What are you being guided by? Because the yoke, as all of the Christians know, because we've all heard this from the pulpit, the yoke of the oxen, and it's two generally, and it guides the oxen together. And so this is why in the scripture, when it talks about marriage, don't be unequally yoked with a non-believer so that the stronger will lead the weaker. But this is not talking about being unequally yoked or even being yoked with Christ. It's saying take on the yoke of Christ. And what does that actually mean? And here was what I had never considered before in this passage. When everybody wants to say, "I want to be in God's will. I want to know what God has for me. How do I know that I'm in His will? How do I know that I am following Him?" When you take on the yoke of Christ and you're learning from God, He's guiding you. When you are truly under the yoke of Christ, which is your identity is fully in Him, then He is guiding you. You are under that yoke and you are actually protected so that you aren't led astray by your feelings, your worries, your fears, your insecurities, whatever the culture is doing, all of the headlines. You are focused on solely being guided by God. You are relying on Him. You are in His will. When you feel like you don't know what to do, remember you are yoked to Christ. So come to Him, learn from Him, and then trust Him. Don't pull against the yoke. Don't second guess. If I could tell my younger self one thing, or even myself today, my New Year's resolution for the last decade has been always trust God more. much sooner. You can trust his yoke because it's easy and it's light.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.